I'd like to say good afternoon to everybody. Now we're going to start a few minutes late because of a conflict in schedule with finance. But we do have a quorum, and we do have online Senator Cogry also. We have present at this time Senator Thomas, Vice Chair, and Senator Elton. And the first bill that we have up today is going to be presented by Senator Stevens. You want to come forward, please? The bill that we're going to be hearing is University Report Teacher Retention.
Okay, all set, Madam President?
Yes.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Well, this is a recommendation that came out of the Joint Legislative Education Funding Task Force that met all summer. And as you well know, the big issues were primarily funding, but this is a smaller issue that the task force felt was important as well. And what it would do is to request that the Regents, the University of Alaska Board of Regents, come into a closer dialogue with the legislature. And it's been my experience in the 8 years I've been here, Madam Chair, that there hasn't often been a forum to meet with the University Board of Regents and talk to them. So I think it's very important to realize that what this bill does is specifically ask the Board of Regents, not the president, not the administration, but the Board of Regents to sit down on an annual basis and talk with the legislature, whether it's a education committee or special education committee or HES committee, but the appropriate body in the legislature, and to talk about what's going on with teacher education in the state of Alaska, the University of Alaska. We know we have enormous needs for teachers in Alaska, and we want to try to make sure that we're producing as many teachers as we can, people who understand Alaska and are willing to stay here and teach in Alaska. So what this bill does, Madam Chair, is it requires the regents to present a report to the proper committee on the 30th legislative day of each session. And the idea was to require it on an annual basis up until 2013. And after that point, then it becomes every other year instead of every year. A question arose along the way as we discussed this. Is it proper to put this in statute, or would it be enough just to say ask the university to come and talk with us every year? And certainly that would be, either way actually could work quite well. But there's a concern that we might have a tendency to forget, or we have different legislators here. And so this puts it in statute and says that it will happen. It will occur annually. After 2013, it'll occur biannually. So it's a very simple matter, I think, really. And I'd be glad to try to ask any questions if anybody has them.
Okay. If anyone have a question at this time, if not, we'll just go right into public testimony. But before we do that, I want to recognize that Senator Dyson is present now. He gave me that look as if I wouldn't say that he was here. So we knew you were coming.
Yep, and Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm sorry, what bill are we on?
241. Sorry about that. Senate Bill 241.
Yeah, okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Before we lose the sponsor, just a quick question.
Yes, you may.
Senator Stevens, one of the things that we have heard discussed is the quality, searching for the appropriate word here, but the quality of entering students at the University of Alaska system. This talks about providing a report on teacher preparation, and I wonder how you narrowed it to that, because it would seem to me also important maybe to get a report from the university on the types of Alaska high school students that are entering the system and what kind of challenges they face with those incoming students.
Well, thank you. Through the chair, it sounds like what you're talking about, Senator, is a much broader picture, bringing the university in and asking questions about incoming students, not necessarily becoming, who are becoming teachers, but in general.
The preparation that those students have as they enter a university, the university system.
That's really beyond the purview of this task force, this recommendation of the task force. We were specifically focusing on teacher preparation and really nothing else. That is a question that certainly should be asked, and we have a right to ask it, and the legislature should be asking those questions. But this is probably not something that you want to approach on an annual basis. But the teacher issue is something we do need to know on an annual basis. How are you doing in the programs you planned? Are you really making progress the way you? What can you do to improve it? It opens up a wide variety of concerns and questions. But I think what you're talking about is a much broader picture of bringing the university in and maybe more the administration occasionally to talk about overall issues. I think this is a little off the subject, Madam Chair, but one of the requests, another request of the task force was to establish a standing committee in education, which would really truly be a forum for K-12 and the university. And I know you're standing committee as well would have that as interest. So however that turns out, that's something that is yet to be decided. But that would be the place for university oversight, I think.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're quite welcome. Anybody else have a question?
Tim?
Yes, Senator Cogry?
Yeah, this is John. Hey, I've got a couple of questions. Doesn't the university already have programs that review the activities of in relation to teachers, as the bill is written now, how will it be different? And secondly, during the task force discussions, were other methods such as bonuses or retaining teachers or any other incentive programs discussed?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, Senator Cowdery, maybe I could help you. Maybe help to understand how this came about. Actually, this was specifically a recommendation by Senator Welkin of Fairbanks, who's worked extensively, of course, with education and with the university. And it was his feeling. I don't try to take words out of his mouth, but his feeling that the university had plenty of programs to help train teachers throughout the state, but that we in the legislature were not ever in a systematic way brought into the picture to know what's going on. So specifically what this bill does is just to deal with the university's workforce development in education in Alaska and talk about the hiring and the training and producing of teachers for our school district. So that's specifically what it does. It doesn't go beyond that. It doesn't get into what school districts need to do and how school districts fund teachers and that sort of thing. That's sort of an argument for another day. But the whole purpose of this is simply to bring the legislature up to date on an annual basis on what the university is doing and its responsibility to help train teachers in the state.
Any other questions?
No, that's it. Thank you.
You're welcome. We do have some people up to testify. We'll take the testimony, and then we'll come back and let
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if I have to run out, I'd like to introduce Tim Lampkin from my office here, who has been working on this, and will be here and available
All right.
for any questions.
That's fine.
Thank you.
So is that John, is that Roster? Roster?
Yes, correct, John Roster. I was expecting to testify as...
They have you down for 241. You're not here for that?
Correct, 107.
Okay. They made a mistake. Is there anybody in the audience that's here for 241? Because what I have in front of me says 241. Nothing for 107 yet. So Pat Pitney is all here for 107? Pat Pitney?
She's online. Senator Davis, this is Pat Pitney. I'm online, and yes, I am online for Senate Bill 241.
Okay, you may do your testimony at this time.
For the record, my name is Pat Pitney. I'm Vice President for Budget and Planning at the University of Alaska. what I'd like to do is just give you a brief overview of some of the programs. Cynthia Henry, our chair of the Academic and Student Affairs Committee for the Board of Regents, is also online, if she could have a moment to speak as well after I'm finished. And there's also Larry Harris is in the audience, and he'd be available for questions. He's the dean of our School of Education in Southeast, and there might also be other deans on the line that if there are questions come up, they might be the appropriate individuals to answer them. Just very quickly, we have three schools of education, the College of Education in Anchorage, School of Education in Fairbanks, and then the School of Education in University of Alaska Southeast Juneau. Each school provides programs pointed for their regional needs, both for their on-campus and their off-campus needs. These range from baccalaureate programs through typically master's programs. There was a large transition in teacher ed in the early 2000s that shifted away from baccalaureate degree teacher certifications to master degree certifications. It has since eased back into some additional baccalaureate degree programs. But that transition in the early 2000s was a significant sea change in teacher preparation, and it is has our number of graduates are rebounding, and the quality of our graduates are strong. Having said that, it's very clear that the number of graduates produced in Alaska aren't sufficient to meet all the teacher openings. The identified gaps, of course, are special ed and then math and science secondary, and mostly in the rural communities. So as capacity is added over time for teacher education programs, that's likely the directions that they would point. In addition to the actual teacher preparation programs, there are several other activities that the university participates in. Those include the Future Teachers of Alaska. This is getting younger participants interested in the education, teachers, being a teacher as a career field and those opportunities that exist. It works with, there's some Native programs, the PETAS program out of the Juneau campus, and the Native Educators Student Association out of UAS that's encouraging more Native students into the teacher career field. We also have teacher mentoring program and the Alaska Teacher Placement Program. The teacher mentoring program is a partnership with the Department of Education, and this is a program that reaches nearly 400 new teachers every year. Puts master teachers with new teachers to give them a sense of a helping hand through their first couple of years. The background that on that particular program is tremendous and has really proved out to be a very effective way to keep teachers in the profession by providing them some early support and mentoring. There's also, through the Institute of Social and Economic Research, a significant amount of research that's being done on Alaska teacher supply and demand. So how many teachers are needed in the state and what areas, and how is the university as well as other teacher training areas providing those for those vacancies. The Alaska Teacher Placement is instrumental in that particular program as well. And there was a four-page summary document provided that shows those type of things that the university is doing. I think the biggest message is the university and the University Board of Regents feel strongly that this is a very important policy direction for the state. It's an important issue to have the teachers of Alaska trained in Alaska and training our, you know, the future generations, so that we believe that this is an important policy direction. We're comfortable with the legislature asking for a report and us providing it versus it being legislated, but we're also very comfortable that if this reporting requirement goes into legislation, is there that it's a very positive thing for the university and for the state. So with that, I would recommend that Regent Henry have an opportunity to comment from her perspective. And then
before we bring on Regent Henry, I'd like to find out from the body if they have a question of you at this time. You're none. We can listen to Cynthia Henry at this time.
Yes, this is Cynthia Henry calling in from Fairbanks. Would you like me to go ahead?
Yes, you may testify.
Thank you very much. I am a member of the University of Alaska Board of Regents and have been the chair for the last 3 years of our Academic and Student Services Committee. So I'm happy to talk about this subject, and thank you for this opportunity. I appreciated Senator Gary Stevens' comments, you know, his summary of what the task is that he's attempting to accomplish, and I think I understand pretty well where he's coming from. I'm sure the Board of Regents would agree that, you know, there's no mission of our state university more important than training teachers for our local schools. For us, that's huge. We talk about that a lot, and the spin-off is great. If we have a University of Alaska graduates teaching our young people, they tend to hear about the University of Alaska, and they pursue their post-secondary education in the state, and then we keep those bright young people in our state of Alaska. So much good comes from that. Good decisions, in my experience, is good decisions made with good data, and Board of Regents tends to get a lot of data. Some of it is a little bit esoteric for us who are lay people, and it has to be dissected somewhat. And ICER's done some great research, which is very readable on the teacher shortage and where the shortages are. The university itself provides this information every year. We get a UA in review book, which is, I'm sure, available to legislators if you're interested. But if I'm understanding Senator Stevens correctly, he wants to focus particularly on the needs for teachers, and I'm guessing in the various disciplines or specialties, and how much the university is meeting that need or how well. And specifically know, you know, how many math teachers were needed and how many of those positions were filled by University of Alaska graduates. That's a good challenge for us to look at that. And I think we would, both bodies, both the Legislative Committee and our Board of Regents, would benefit from having that very specific information. And I don't know, a lot of information is available, but I don't think it's been put in that kind of a report. And I think we would all find that interesting. So what I heard him say is he wants to know what the gap is, and then how do we close it? How do we set goals to close that gap so that we're filling the needs that are right here in our state? As Pat Pitney mentioned, on the retention side, we have not looked at that a whole lot on the Board of Regents. That almost gets a little out of our purview once the teacher is trained and hired and whether they stay on. Although there are implications for further training at the university, we haven't focused on that a whole lot. I do know that, as Pat Sidney mentioned, the mentor program is huge. It's a huge influencer on how long teachers stay in the profession or stay in particular communities. So if I interpret what the assignment is here, is to guarantee that regents will meet with legislators on this topic once a year, and to that I say hooray, let's do that. And the goal is to have a very readable report for people who aren't statisticians, and it wouldn't talk in say nines or things like that. It would specifically talk about numbers of vacancies and how many of those vacancies are filled by our UA graduates. And that's a laudable goal, and I'm there, and I can't imagine that other regions wouldn't agree, because I think we want to have that discussion.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? I don't hear any questions at this time, but I think there was somebody else there that wanted to speak. Did you have someone else there? We'll go on then. Is there anybody in the audience signed up to speak to 241? It's seeing none. I'll come back to the committee. And we have this CS before us. I'd like for somebody to make a motion for that we accept this as our working document.
Madam Chairman, I move that committee substitute for Senate Bill 241 be accepted as our working document.
Are there any objections? Okay, so 241 is before us. Now, we may debate it or ask to have the sponsor to come back up if you need questions of him, or if there are any changes that you'd like to make, any amendments you want to offer to 241. Am I seeing a hand from you?
Yes, ma'am.
Senator Thomas?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a comment. I'd certainly like to thank the Joint Legislative Education Funding Task Force, as well as everybody they worked with in bringing this forward, because it's certainly, there's lots of areas we'd probably like to talk about, but this is certainly a very important one, and I'm sure people would like to probably expand its scope, but I think for at least right now, it is appropriate. Teacher preparation, obviously an important thing, and I believe it reminds me of that picture you see on the wall some places of the weathered-looking old cowboy that says he's not sure that's what he would have done, or words of that effect, if he'd have known what this job really was about. So I think in the changing times that we have, in particularly in the high schools and stuff, that there's extreme challenge, and I believe that when the reports are made, there will be an exchange of questions and answers about just where we're headed and how we get there. So I think that will be helpful. Like I said, there are a lot of areas that people would like to talk to the university about it, but I think this is an extremely important one because it does deal with our K through 12. It's a rather simple and straightforward piece of legislation, so I certainly support it and understand that it'll help us with a better understanding of the impact teacher preparation has, and therefore the ability to actually address the problems in the educational system. So I think it's a little broader than maybe people, you know, by its initial wording, but I think it's a very helpful piece of legislation actually in moving forward in education.
Thank you. Any other comments? And I certainly would say that I think the chair of education for the Board of Regents, Mrs. Henry, has said exactly what Senator Stevens said that he thought this committee would, this bill would do, and they seem to be willing to accept that charge. Would you like to come up and make any closing statements before we decide if we're going to move this piece of legislation?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think in hearing from the university, you had a chance to see the wide variety of things the university is involved in, and there is no chasm between the legislature and the university on this issue. I think we are in agreement that we need this forum, this opportunity to sit down and talk about this very important issue of teacher training. The university, of course, has research programs going. The university is involved in the mentoring program, and certainly most directly involved in through its various schools in educating young people going into teaching. So I think this only has good things for the future. I think it's something that is reasonable, and I look forward to having this forum so that the university regents can sit down with the legislature. And it's not just a matter of a one way. What are you doing? But it's what are the regents doing? But it's also what can the legislature do? We need to know: are there areas that we need to work further on? Is there more assistance the university needs in this area of teacher training? So, thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your time.
You're quite welcome. Okay, we have completed the testimony, and we've heard the closing statements on that. I have no problem with this bill being moved forward. If we need to hold it over, I'm willing to do that also. But hearing from just one of the legislators here, seem to think that he's ready to make a motion to move this.
I would make that motion, Madam Chairman, that we move Senate Bill, committee substitute, right?
Yes.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 241 out of committee with individual recommendations, and there is no fiscal note that I'm aware of anyhow.
There isn't.
There isn't, okay.
Are there any objections to that? Hear no objection, I do not have to call the roll, and we will close out on 241. The next bill that we're going to hear today is Senate Bill 107. And after I pass the bill, I'm going to ask that my aide come up and give an overview of the bill. Senate Bill 107. Are you ready?
I'm ready. For the record, I'm Tom Obermeyer, aide to Senator Davis. The bill before us is the committee substitute for Senate Bill 107, Labor and Commerce, Work Draft 25LS0702M, as in Mike, January 28th, 08. It's an act relating to naturopaths and to naturopathic practice, establishing an Alaska Naturopathic Council, amending the duties of the Board of Pharmacy relating to naturopathic practice, and providing for an effective date. Changes from the original bill, for purposes of expanding the scope of practice and regulating naturopathic medicine in Alaska, committee substitute for 107 was adopted by Senate Labor and Commerce in January of 08 after other versions have been introduced in other legislatures, including a task force assigned to the matter in the 23rd legislature, which failed to produce a report. This bill establishes required licensing fees and an Alaska Naturopathic Council comprised of 5 members, 2 naturopaths, 2 public members, and 1 pharmacist appointed by the Board of Pharmacy. This bill authorizes naturopaths to perform the formally prohibited acts of performing minor surgery, using antiseptics and anesthetics, and 2, prescribing drugs by obtaining a prescription endorsement from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing after obtaining, I understand, a DEA authorization. The bill authorizes naturopaths also to order laboratory and imaging tests consistent with naturopathic medical education and training. It prohibits major surgery and spinal and general anesthetics. Oversight was changed in this committee by the Labor and Commerce Committee for more rigorous state regulation involving MDs and State Board of Medical Board to largely self-regulation by 2 naturopaths, 1 public member, and 1 pharmacist. This change was reportedly due in part to unwillingness by medical doctors and the state medical board to oversee the practice for liability reasons and to great differences in training and ethical responsibilities between MDs and naturopaths. It may also reflect the added expense of multiple committees for such a small membership, which was one of the reasons it was decided not to create and fund a formal board initially. The bill does, however, leave open the public member position for an MD willing to volunteer on the Alaska Naturopathic Council. Also removed from the original bill were the Advisory Committee and Formulary Council. The Advisory Committee was to have selected the Formulary Council and to have reviewed allegations of misconduct, while the Alaska Naturopathic Formulary Council was to have included a medical doctor or osteopath and pharmacist appointed by respective boards to approve designated prescription drugs and to authorize prescription endorsements to qualified naturopaths. As an overview of naturopathic practice in Alaska and the nation, the Alaska Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing has had full licensing responsibility for licensing and regulating the practice of naturopathy in Alaska since it started licensing, as I understand, in 1994. In 2002, there were an estimated 1,500 naturopaths in the country, and are currently about 44 licensed national pass in Alaska, seven of whom report addresses in other states. There reportedly are about a dozen Alaska national pass with very active practices who view the expanded scope of this bill to recognize an important natural extension of their training and everyday practice. The department only licenses national pass who have provided satisfactory proof of graduation from one of four accredited on-campus schools of naturopathy in the U.S. There are a number of unaccredited naturopathy correspondence schools in the country, and while curriculums vary from school to school, the department requires that applicants for licensing must also have passed the naturopathic physician's licensing examination. Naturopathic licensing and practice procedures are found in 15 states, including Alaska, Arizona, California, Connecticut, Florida, Hawaii, Idaho, Kansas, Maine, Montana, New Hampshire, Oregon, Utah, Vermont, and Washington. Roughly nine states allow various levels of prescribing privileges and different levels of independence from supervision by state medical and pharmacy boards, licensing agencies, and MDs. A number of states prohibit licensing naturopaths, including Massachusetts and South Carolina. Nevertheless, this bill recognizes the growing interest in naturopathy nationwide. People seeking alternative remedies need professional advice, including over-the-counter naturopathic remedies manufactured, advertised, and packaged by many companies, some of which reportedly support naturopathic schools financially. This bill attempts to expand naturopathic practice while providing enough oversight to protect the public.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions before we begin to take testimony?
Yes, Senator Cowdery.
Yes, Senator Cowdery.
I thought that generally that these kind of councils are appointed by the governor, but I noticed this is being appointed by the commission. I wonder why is that?
I guess I would have to answer that. As far as I know, I didn't know that they were appointed by the governor. So I could have somebody from the Department of Commerce to speak to that, because they never said that it had to be done by the governor.
Well, I thought all appointees have got to be done. Maybe I'm wrong, but I thought all of these.
She does for boards and commissions. Are you confused with that? Is there anybody here from Department of Commerce? Would you come up, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Jennifer Strickler. I'm the licensing chief for the Division of Corporations, Business Professional Licensing, Department of Commerce. Through the chair, to answer Senator Cowdery's question, in fact, that's one of the items I had here to address.
Yes.
We looked at the establishment of this naturopathic council, and we also consulted with Department of Law. Initially, Law made a comment that they thought there may be a constitutional issue, and then came back and said, no, not really, because if it's an advisory council to the department, and the department is the regulatory agency, then there is not an issue. But if this council sets regulations, promulgates regulations, then it must be appointed through the governor's office. And that's the direct answer to his question.
All right, thank you. Did you have any other comments to make pertaining to this bill while you're here?
Yes, I do, Madam
Yes,
Chair.
You may testify this time.
Thank you. The bill creates a 5-member Alaska Naturopathic Council and expands the scope of practice of a naturopath to allow for prescriptive authority and to perform minor surgery. My division is responsible for regulation of programs established without a board, and of which naturopathy is one of those programs. Our division's mission is to protect the public by ensuring that only safe, competent, and qualified practitioners can offer services to Alaskan consumers. The division is not staffed by industry members. However, we do have accessibility and availability to practitioners of other healthcare industries, which we often turn to for opinions and guidance. To give you a little bit of information here, since licensure was created on July 28, 1994, there currently is only 44 current licensees, of which 37 have Alaska addresses, 7 are out of state. There has been no complaints filed with the division in FY05. In FY06, there was only one complaint of unlicensed activity. And in FY07, there have been no complaints filed. There have been no regulation projects in the recent years except for fee changes under the self-sufficiency laws. Creation of a regulatory entity, or in this case, the council, whether advisory or regulatory, is an expensive proposition. The licensing of naturopaths, it's under the Centralized Licensing Act of 0801-065 that requires programs to be self-sufficient through licensing fees. Any expenses in support of the naturopathic council will need to be paid through an increase of naturopathic licensing fees. Currently, this program is staffed by one position that also provides support to nine other programs without licensing boards. The creation of a council will require the need of a staff person to keep the official records as required under the Alaska Procedures Act. If naturopaths are allowed to expand their scope of practice, we concur there will be a need to establish a regulatory oversight entity. The bill currently establishes the Alaska Naturopathic Council within the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Under guidance from the Governor's Office, we encourage this council to be established through boards and commissions in the Governor's Office and not be established by the Department. A process already exists to make such appointments, and recreating the process within the Department would be cumbersome. We have some concerns to share with you about this bill. It is the department's position that the industry be responsible to convince the legislature of the appropriateness in expanding its scope of practice. However, as the regulatory agency responsible for public protection, I would like to share with you the following concerns. In 2004, the State Medical Board wrote a letter that unanimously opposed the expanded practice presented in the bill. The board specifically cited, naturopathic theory and practice are not based on the body of basic knowledge related to health, disease, and healthcare, which has been widely accepted by the scientific community. Moreover, irrespective of its theory, the scope and quality of naturopathic education do not prepare the practitioner to make an adequate diagnosis and provide appropriate treatment. Even more alarming is the medical board's statement that the education and training attained by those who practice naturopathy does not prepare them adequately in modern pharmacology, nor are they sufficiently trained and skilled to perform surgical procedures. Contrast the four-year education received by naturopaths, consisting of 2 years of didactic training and 2 years of clinical training, against the typical 8 to 12 years of education and training received by allopathic and osteopathic physicians. Section 5 on page 4 requires 60 hours of education from a program approved to gain prescriptive authority. We point out that this, in contrast to physician assistants who are required to have formal training in addition to clinical rotation training for at least a year, similar to medical doctors before being allowed to prescribe or to perform minimal invasive procedures. Also, advanced nurse practitioners who are required to have formal training and work under a preceptor to perform minimal invasive procedures and is required to obtain additional pharmacology hours. Both the PAs and AMPs could originally practice only under an approved collaborative plan with the medical doctor. Veterinarians, on the other hand, possess a minimum of 8 years of education in which the term junior surgery training begins in the seventh year of schooling, and minor surgery performed independently once they graduate after 8 years or more years of schooling. Some choose never to do surgery, while others specialize in it. Pharmacology training spans approximately 6 years of education. We also have information from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts Special Commission on Complementary and Alternative Medical Practitioners Minority Report, questioning the quality of naturopaths' education experience, efficacy of treatments, the accuracy of their diagnosis, or the rational basis of their beliefs, and the majority report suggesting that regulation exclude certain practices such as surgery and the prescribing of controlled substances, and to promulgate regulations to establish standards for required collaboration between naturopathic doctors and conventional medical doctors. There is also writings prepared by Kimball C. Atwood, MD, making statements such as, for an occupation with little semblance of objective, scientific, and ethical basis, licensure legitimizes an otherwise illegitimate and dangerous activity. Also writings of Arnold S. Rillman, MD, who studied the textbook of normal medicine used in schools of naturopathic medicine, that states that the textbook explains naturopathy objects to the use of pharmaceutical agents and depends instead on the use of herbal or natural remedies of unproven value. Information such as these and others have caused us as Alaska regulators to question whether allowing licensed naturopaths to expand their scope of practice to perform minor surgery and be granted prescriptive authority is really in the best interest of Alaskan consumers, especially in a state of Alaska, the size of Alaska. If the legislature deems an expanded scope of practice is appropriate, we offer one final suggestion, in that naturopaths who perform minor surgery and gain prescriptive authority be allowed to perform only under an approved collaborative relationship plan with a conventional medical doctor. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And thank you for your testimony, and I don't want to put you on the spot here, but have the department, I mean, have the division decided where they would support this bill or not support it? You said you have some concerns. You made one recommendation that they have to practice, if they're going to do surgery, do it in a collaborative way with an MD. But you didn't take it any further. What is the?
I would have to summarize it as saying we've expressed our concerns, but we would take a neutral position on this. We suggest that you establish a collaborative plan. If you mandate that this should be, we will administer, because we're the implementing agency. If you choose not to, then we won't.
All right, thank you. Any questions? Yes, Senator Dyson.
Thank you. Sorry, I had to run out of the room. My wife's having car problems. I heard your testimony that there had been only one report of nonconformity or somebody practicing. Not. Do we know if there have been any reports of harm to patient clients here in the state in the last 4 or 5 years?
Through the Chair, Senator Dyson, our department, our investigative unit, does not have any records of complaints or of harm being filed with us.
But if there had been legal or civil actions taken, would you have known about those?
Yes, we would have.
Okay. And this is the first time I've heard the bill or seen it. So it seems to me that it only expands what this group of health practitioners can do, only in a couple of things. It looks like the minor surgery and some more pharmacology kinds of things. Am I understanding it correctly?
Through the chair, that's correct. It's minor surgery and to have prescriptive authority.
And is there limits on the prescriptive authority in this bill? Maybe I'm asking the wrong person.
Yes, it is.
There are limits?
Yes. They would not have a, and Tom, you could tell them what page that is on there. You're familiar with the bill than I am. But it says in the bill.
Looks like maybe on page 4 it's talking about they can only do the bills that or the prescriptions that that their own formulary council says they can do. Is that, am I reading it right, Tom?
My understanding, and I'm sure that there are naturopathic people that could address what their plan is, but the my understanding is that they requested to do all legend drugs, and frankly, all. We'd have to legend drugs, other than but not narcotics. And I think there probably is a doctor in the audience, MD, also that may be able to tell us what this is. I'm not familiar with all these drugs or what would be done here. It was intended that the Board of Pharmacy would deal with this issue as a member of the board to help construct something that might make sense for their needs. But it sounds like, at least from what I understand, since there are other states that do similar things, perhaps in Arizona and elsewhere, legend drugs may be things like antibiotics and other types of drugs that are prescribed for various reasons, and all legend drugs, which may involve a number of cures for different types of things. I can't speak to the individual drug myself.
And I'll wait and talk to somebody who can. This is an area that certainly concerns me. Thank you.
Any other question? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I obviously am looking for some direction, and when I see some of the comments made, and I was quickly lost my place here looking, but I see that the comments made by someone referenced the Dr. Atwood, and I'm still looking to find that page again, refers to basically naturopaths as witch doctors is what it amounts to. So when someone takes that kind of an approach to it, it concerns me about maybe what their credentials are or their motivation. So that concerns me for that reason. But I'm also looking, you know, to, even though this is a minor change, it does concern me as to what the department's real feelings are on it as far as if they would suggest that certain things be done. I'd be more than willing to look at those and make suggestions as well as to what we should do to maybe make their practice conform a little bit more with others, and their educational requirements maybe more in line with what experts think. To simply form a board to decide, made up of the general public, which would probably be people in the same position as I am, wondering and reading different things and, you know, opinions back and forth. So I don't know if it's a question as much as it is a statement. It concerns me when some say this and some say that. We always get that. But when the department has concerns as well, causes me a little concern about moving forward with something without having a little better direction, I guess.
Along that line, if I may?
You may.
Anywhere in this bill's path here, have we heard from the state medical board?
This bill, you know, this is not the first time this bill has come around, but if you're talking about within this session, no, we have not. We have not. No one came forward. They have. And then when it fell down a couple of years ago, or maybe 3 or 4 years ago, they had gone out and set up an advisory group to get together, and they were to come back with a report. In some way, it broke down, and nothing ever came of that. The bill has been introduced several times since then, but during this particular time, no MD has come forward, but there are some signed up to speak today.
All right. Thank you.
Madam Chairman?
Yes, Senator Cogry?
Yeah, I think that was Senator Stevens had a task force out.
That is right.
When it came over. And like you say, I never heard any more about that after that. But I was wondering what this, could we have a description of, by someone, of minor surgery, what that is?
As far as the definition in the bill, it's not, but we will maybe have somebody that's a professional that can address that. We do have some people in the audience to testify, and we will come back to that question when we begin to talk about the bill. Senator Elton, did you have your hand up also?
I did. Thank you, Madam Chair. And this may be a question that Jennifer wants to address and can defer, but it will be a question that I'll ask again if it's appropriate of somebody else. I mean, we heard testimony about the concerns of the Alaska Medical, I can't remember the name of the organization right now, but I'm curious as to whether or not there have been any reports or any studies that get to the issue of medical mistakes by naturopaths compared to medical mistakes by other health practitioners, whether they're PAs or nurses or physicians. I mean, because it's one thing, I think, to say that there are issues out there and there are dangers, but it would be nice to see if there are any studies that compare medical mistakes made by different types of health practitioners, including naturopaths.
Through the chair to Senator Elton. Senator Elton, at this moment, I'm not familiar with any reports. There may very well be, but that's something that we'd be willing to look into and try to get some information on.
And it may be a question that can be answered by somebody else, so just kind of a notice to other people that may be testifying about it. That's one of the questions that I've got.
Right,
thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Any other questions? If there are no other questions, I'll just start calling from the list of people signed up to speak to this bill.
Yes, Senator. This is Senator Cadre.
Yes, Senator.
I was wondering, is it a requirement that the naturopath to have insurance, you know, malpractice insurance or anything?
I'm not able to speak to that, but there's somebody here that could speak to that. So during their testimony, I guess that would be brought up. I'm sure they would have the option to have insurance if they wanted it. Mary Minor, are you here for 107? Or is that somebody online?
That's online. We have John Raster here.
Mary Minor?
She's on there.
Hello?
Yes?
This is Dr. Minor. Were you...
You may testify if you're here for 107.
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Would you
state?
Okay.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mary Minor. I'm the Secretary of the Alaska Association of Naturopathic Physicians. And I wanted to address some of the questions that have come up, you know, while they're still fresh in my mind. First of all, as far for Senator Elton's question about harm done to the public, I would refer you to the Legislative Research Report number 05.074. This was a report that was prepared by the Alaska State Legislature and by the request of Pete Cott. And I have also sent that to Jennifer Strickler, along with other materials that she may or may not have been able to review. And in that report, there is a, let me flip to the page, complaints against naturopathic doctors and disciplinary actions against physicians in selected states. This is 1997 to 1998. Yeah, but basically, it's looking at, it's not exactly an apples-to-apples comparison. It's looking at complaints against naturopaths versus disciplinary actions against licensed physicians. And it's important to understand that not all complaints are based on, you know, bad practices. Some have merit and some don't. But because the disciplinary actions in the various states against naturopaths are so few, they weren't capable of doing an apples-to-apples comparison. I also have I don't know who on the panel has received our white paper, but there is. In our white paper, there is a section on disciplinary actions in Arizona, Washington State, and Oregon, where our disciplinary actions are approximately half of per capita of those that are applied to medical doctors and DOs, and I would be more than happy to supply that information to anybody who would find that helpful in you know, determining what the what the rates of practice are. I think it's important to understand that this is not novel legislation, that naturopaths in various states have had prescriptive authority since approximately 1985, and that our record for safety is amazingly good. Now, in terms of the question about, Senator Dyson's question, this would not be unlimited prescriptive authority. The reason for the council is to look at the formularies of other states and see if there's a formulary that council can recommend be a part of the authority of naturopaths who meet certain criteria. As Mr. Obermeyer pointed out, this is by and large legend drugs being non-controlled substances that have a very low degree of potential for abuse or dependency. There are things like blood pressure medication, hormones, antibiotics, those sorts of things. But again, not all naturopaths would have that authority. They would have to go through a test, basically, that's at the end of the 60-hour class. Now, it's important to understand that most of the schools where naturopaths are trained have had the ability to write prescriptions since the mid-80s, and so in school, students are given exposure to using prescriptive authority appropriately. The other thing I wanted to point out is that there is also, as far as Dr. Atwood's complaints of several years ago, I think it's important to understand that was one person who, was testifying to, in Massachusetts, a state where there are no licensed naturopaths, and there's a difference between people who just, go through schools that, so-called schools that are just, licensed or certificate mills, and people who go through rigorous four-year training. As far as Ms. Strickler's concern about the medical training, I did also send her a head-to-head comparison of University of Washington Medical School, the WAMI program, and the Bastyr University School, including the requirements to get into those programs, what is entailed in those programs, and it's easy to see that there's much more similarity than there are differences. These are all programs that are through the U.S. Department of Education, which accredits, medical schools as well as naturopathic schools. And so, these programs certainly have been vetted, and there is a standard there. The last thing I just wanted to point out in my testimony today is that we in Alaska, especially, I have been practicing for the last 25 years. And in Washington and in Alaska since 1990, the future of medicine is certainly, or the present day state of medicine is far more integrative than it was 10, 20 years ago. And, that trend line is going to continue into the future. It's important that when people are taking responsibility for their own health and wanting to do things for themselves, that they have the guidance of somebody who has a foot in both worlds. At this point, the the textbooks for prescription for integrative medicine that looks at the interactions and possible bad interactions of natural therapies and prescription medicines are currently all being written by people from my profession, because we're the people who deal with those folks all the time. There is a group of people in Alaska who are ready to go out and provide care to patients in not just in Anchorage, but in, you know, Fairbanks and Juneau. And as this doctor shortage gets more and more of a crunch, and as we're competing with people from, you know, the other 49 states, it's in the best interest of the public to have well-trained, qualified people who can have the tools in their toolkit that allow them to give the appropriate treatment for, you know, diabetes, infectious diseases, heart disease. When I have to send my patients to another provider, it makes a barrier of care that there's no data that supports that where this has been done in other states, the public health has been harmed. And so I would ask that the committee take these, the facts as opposed to the concerns that are not based in facts into account when making your call here.
All right. Thank you very much. Any questions of this? Any questions? No questions. I do want to say this to the committee. This is not the first committee of referral for this bill. This bill came to this committee from Labor and Commerce. And there was no testimony given about any of the concerns that have been presented to us today. And I do want you to know, had those concerns been addressed at that time, I would have already had some time to work on that. But I haven't had time because this is first given to me in today's testimony. What I'm going to do now is just continue to take the testimony that we have. And I know there are several people in the audience. Don't have your name on a list, but if you want to testify on 107, you may come up. State your name for the record and testify.
Thank you, Senator Davis. My name is John Raster. I'm a local ear, nose, and throat surgeon, and I'm testifying on behalf of the Alaska State Medical Association. I'm currently the Speaker of the House for our House of Delegates. And personally, as a private practice physician, I appreciate the naturopathic community and operating within their realm. They provide obviously good service because they have many patients for which they render care. As the Alaska State Medical Association Speaker of the House, however, I must object to the expanded scope of practice under Senate Bill 107. The concerns that we have been voiced in the past, and you should all have written testimony from our President Ross Tanner, and then last year's President Roland Gower. And if not, I can furnish you with that.
We don't have the testimony of last year, but that wouldn't have been given to us.
Okay. And then if I could just speak briefly about the broad themes that we have concerns, and then I'd be happy to answer any questions. The two main areas of concern are the access to care and then patient safety and how that relates to the training of naturopaths versus physicians. Access to care is a little easier. There are, you know, more than 1,000 medical doctors, and we're still short. That is true. There are, I think, 30 or 40 naturopaths who are licensed to practice, I suspect, in mainly the larger cities where there already is care, that being Juneau, Fairbanks, and Anchorage. Also, Medicare does not pay at the federal level. And one of the quotes that I heard earlier was from a Medicare guidebook about not paying or reimbursing for naturopathic care. So we don't feel that that would significantly augment access to care. In terms of patient safety and the training, it's easier for me to speak about the medical training, having gone through it. The two issues being medical prescription ability, you know, legend or non-controlled substances, and then surgery. To get a license in the state of Alaska as a physician, you have to graduate from 4 years of medical school, which would be 4 years of naturopathic, would be the opposite. And then you have to practice for 2 years under the tutelage of someone in a residency training in order to be able to write a prescription. You cannot simply graduate from medical school with your 60 graduate hours of coursework and then come to the state of Alaska and prescribe medications. Medications can sound innocuous, but they can be problematic. Non-controlled substances include insulin, and if given in too high of a dose, can kill someone. And a penicillin can kill someone. Non-controlled substances include chemotherapy for the treatment of cancers and things like that. So part of learning how to prescribe medicine is indeed learning pharmacology, but it is a broad education in terms of seeing patients and being under the tutelage of someone. Medicines. The other issue that is in terms of the overall philosophy, medical doctors are pushing more and more towards evidence-based medicine. And naturopathy has generally not been as interested in evidence-based care, case-controlled studies. But all of the medications that they're asking to prescribe have to pass muster with evidence-based care because they have to get through the FDA. And in order to get through the FDA, you have to show evidence that it does what it says it's going to do. Regarding minor surgery, I'm a surgeon. And again, if I did my 5 years of residency training, 5 years, I'm sorry, 4 years of medical school, and in medical school, we are trained how to do surgery, and we do under the very close watchful eye of surgeons. But I couldn't come up here and practice surgery, even minor surgery. I have to do 2 years of residency training, and then I can do surgery, in-office surgery. According to the way that this bill is written, you could do the surgery that in an office doing local anesthesia with significant complications. A graphic case in point being a non-surgically trained medical doctor in the office next to me did a simple surgery where he removed a mole. Well, underneath the mole was the gentleman's spinal accessory nerve, and that's the nerve that raises your shoulder, and he's a contractor, and so he can't raise his right arm anymore. Now, that being said, mistakes happen amongst well-trained surgeons. There's no doubt about it, but it's a shame when the training wasn't there in terms of the oversight and legitimacy that's given by licensure. Finally, physicians are required to, I believe by state law, to carry malpractice insurance. And then I'd be happy to answer any questions to the best of my ability.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Senator Tom Elton.
Thank you. And thank you, Dr. Rasser. I suspect I may know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I mean, are there... Can you see any mitigating amendments that could be made to the existing bill that may help you get beyond some of the concerns that you've raised? And I'm thinking, for example, of some of the stuff that we've heard and some of the stuff that's in the back material here, including perhaps having an MD on the board or having a regular board that's appointed by the governor and that has all of the authorities of law under the division in the Department of Commerce, or perhaps having a naturopath operate under the endorsement of an MD. I mean, are any of these ideas ideas that help you get to some of the concerns that you've expressed?
Through the chair, if I could answer, Senator Elton, I know a little bit about what's done in other states. In other states, I understand that naturopaths are licensed, and I'm not aware of a great collaboration that exists in other states. My main concerns with the way that this bill is written is that the formulary would be decided by a board that would be naturopaths. So essentially, that could expand immediately to include all drugs. Having one physician on that board, I'm not sure that that would help. Regarding the other states and the way that they go about this, I think there are about a half a dozen states that allow some restricted prescription ability by naturopaths. And I think only one allows what could potentially be a case here, and that is most non-narcotics and most uncontrolled substances, and that's Arizona. And I don't know their experience very well. So we would be ahead of the curve, and I think that a group would need to be formed to look at that issue rather than my specific testimony.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Doctor. Thanks, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. Yes, Senator Dyson?
Yeah, thanks. I'm really torn on this one. And one of my mentors in politics told me when I first got elected to office 22 years ago that the most difficult thing you'll ever do is to get very accurate information that doesn't have a spin to it. And my experience, including at this table, has confirmed that. The two naturopaths that I know that practice in my community have a good reputation and a wide following, and there's quite a congregation of folks that feel that they've been significantly helped. And I'm impressed with that. And I have good friends who have similar qualifications to yours who at one time or another said it's all quackery. At best, they do no harm. But even then, dupe people into thinking that they're getting good treatment for whatever the pathology they're dealing with is, and it keeps them from getting to somebody that can really help them. You know, these are folks that are really sick, and they can tell me war stories about people that died because they thought they were being treated, you know, and so on and so forth. And there was treatment that could have prolonged their life or arrested the development. And one of those who had made the most demagogic types of comments about the naturopath profession, one time we were out moose hunting, and he said, "Got to eat some crow." Last week in the New England Journal of Medicine, you know, it was a big article about the efficacy of some particular kind of compound that he says those nutty naturopaths have been talking about for years, and darn it, they were right. And he was, you know, having to realize that they were. The couple of things that you have said that I was concerned about, and that is, it's my understanding that there are so many prescriptive medicines around these days that you know, are very powerful and very useful, but there's significant danger of the interaction of those. And every time I go down here to the pharmacy, I always get a long list of the things that, you know, you need to be aware of and watch out for, the side effects, and then significant warnings about you know, mixing them without your primary physician knowing about it. And so your concern about that kind of rings true with me. It appears to me, and what I've seen here in the testimony, I'm just looking at first time today, that AMA guys here in Alaska have been reluctant to sit on this board or to exercise any responsibility, oversight for the naturopaths. Is that your understanding?
You know, before I became a board of delegate member at our Alaska State Medical Association, I understand there was a task force. People have alluded to it here with, I think, Senator Seekins. And so I know that there was a physician, Dr. Malter, who's seated behind me, and he can perhaps speak to that if you'd like. But I don't know much of what went on there.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Mine was more of a statement than a question.
All right. Thank you. Senator Thomas?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Thank you, Doctor, for your testimony, and I, too, remain concerned. Actually, thousands of people die every year, tens of thousands, in hospitals under the treatment of medical doctors. So, you know, that's a little hard for me to sort out. I've become used to sitting and listening to people in competing, somewhat competing situations downgrade the abilities and efficacy or reasonableness of using the other person, not just in the medical field, but in a wide variety of areas. So I try and sort that out as well, too. What does concern me and what I would like to see is people a little more participatory to try and at least figure out how we can do it. If the differences, obviously, in the medical training exist, but there are different degrees that are granted from different schools, and I don't know if the state is able to sort all that out. I would hope that they would be able to. But it would be helpful to me to have more cooperation. We've dealt with a variety of issues last year, this year, you know, whether it's between doctors and assistants and dentists and their assistants and all types of other situations where people just don't seem to want to come together to cooperate, to promote, you know, what would be helpful in the state of Alaska to have a not necessarily a broader approach to medical treatment, but maybe even just more availability. And that's probably what concerns me most, is we're trying to make sure that we can put a reasonable, effective care into rural areas. You know, this may be an experience or an attempt to do that or opportunity to do that for people that maybe look at medicine in a little different fashion. So this might not be a question either. This is probably more a statement. The idea of how do we accomplish that? How do we get people to come forward and not just recite some of the stuff that's been put forth, but actually legitimate studies where we have potentially doctors participating with an open mind in what actually could occur and say that, yeah, we're willing to work with these folks to determine the criteria for them to accomplish this, to spread spread and accomplish the great need that we have, particularly in some areas, some rural areas. We've got obviously a lack of doctors and trained professionals in the cities as well, but it's just a dire need in the rural areas. So, like I said, I don't know if you have a response to that or not.
Well, I'm not sure that this bill would be the vehicle to get medical care to the bush or smaller towns through the naturopathic 30 or 40 doctors. In terms of collaboration, I mean, personally, actually, I refer patients to a naturopath or two in town if I've hit some brick walls. In terms of speaking at the state level, in terms of cooperation, we're at a little bit at the edge of the curve. You know, there we have very little data from other states because this doesn't occur in most other states in the union. So we would be, you know, starting from ground zero, so to speak. The other alternative would be if the naturopathic community were to make their training more similar to medical training in order to prescribe medical drugs or perform medical procedures, have evidence-based studies or mini residencies or surgical training residencies, certainly that would seem reasonable. If you look back historically, that the doctors of osteopathy were similar. You know, DOs, they were separate from medicine and medical doctors and had dealt a lot with alignment of the spine and non-traditional therapy, and they have become more medicalized, more scientific and evidence-based. And so consequently, I think most people don't really notice that there's much of a difference. And so if that model were to happen from the bottom up, that would certainly seem reasonable. But there's certainly a way to move forward if we were to find some common ground. I think that that's a reasonable thing, but I think it's a hard task to create our sort of mini residency here for you know, the 30 naturopaths to become more medicalized.
Thank you. Appreciate your answer.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Yes, Senator Elton?
And this is one of those issues that engage the mind, Doctor, and so mine has become engaged, and I apologize. Just two additional questions. Your testimony didn't address the ability of a naturopath to order and perform diagnostic and imaging tests consistent with their training. I mean, is that an issue with you or the AMA?
I put a question mark by it, but not an X. Okay. So not as much of an issue as a potential harm. You know, could you have a misdiagnosis? Delay in diagnosis certainly is a problem, but not as identifiable as cutting a nerve or killing someone with insulin.
Okay.
So less problem.
And another question, and this is maybe reflective of my lack of memory, but we've had debates here in the legislature on prescriptive authority for others, and I if I'm remembering correctly, one of them was optometrists, and there has been pushback from the medical community also on those kind of prescriptive authorities. I mean, maybe you could remind us of other practitioners other than optometrists who now have prescriptive authority that didn't in the recent past.
Well, DOs would come to mind in the more remote past, and then optometrists, I think for now, are all that come to mind, yeah.
Okay. Midwives?
I don't think so, but I'm sorry I don't have that information at the tip of my head.
Nurse practitioners.
They're nurse practitioners have it, yes.
Yes, nurse practitioners, physician's assistants.
They are under the doctor, but the nurse practitioners have it.
Nurse practitioners actually do have prescriptive authority, wide-ranging, and that is separate from physicians. That's exactly right.
And perhaps, and this is a question not necessarily for you, Doctor, and I apologize. I sometimes have to say them aloud before I forget them, but other people who testify may want to comment on whether or not the expansion of prescriptive authorities there have created medical issues or harms to the public that we're not aware of. So.
Lack of data.
Okay. Thanks, Doctor.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience that want to speak to this? You may come. And while she's coming, I was just going to make the statement that we have to realize that there are states that are doing exactly what they are asking to do here. It's not that many. I said 12 or 13 states, and there's information that we could get. And I'm interested in knowing how they set their boards up, but that information is easy to come by. And I'll make sure that we do have that information coming before us before we hear this bill again. Would you state your name for the record? And
my name is Emily Kane. I'm a naturopathic doctor. And I would like to summarize three areas: the education of naturopathic doctors, access to health care in general, and public safety. Several members of the committee have requested information about comparing disciplinary reports in between allopaths and naturopathic doctors in different states, and also our comparative training. We've got a white paper. I've got a couple more of these. Many of you have seen these before. We've been passing them for a couple of years. But if anybody would like to have one of these documents that put some facts and figures together, I've got a couple with me. So as you know, but just to state for the record, Senate Bill 107, Substitute 107, sets up a council of five members, two naturopaths, one pharmacist, and two public members, one of whom may be a medical doctor, to pave the way for better use of naturopathic doctors as primary care health providers in the state of Alaska. We are designated primary health care providers. The state-based insurance pays for us. And even though Medicare, Medicaid don't reimburse for our services at this point, that's a federal issue, and it's being debated currently in Washington, D.C. at a federal level, and it certainly will come up with the likely in the next 4 to 8 years at a national level in terms of access to properly trained primary care providers. My education is fairly typical of licensed naturopaths in this state, and I want to go through that just a little bit. I think it was you, Senator Dyson, wondered how one gets to be licensed in this state, and Alaska has that well in place. You have to go through, be graduated from an accredited school of naturopathic medicine. There's only four of them in the country, and you need to enter with a undergraduate degree. My undergraduate studies were at Harvard University. I graduated in 1978 with honors, and I had another career for about a decade, and then I returned to medical school. I went to Bastyr University. I was there for 6 years, and I had a year of residency training after that. We call it preceptorship. Part of my residency training was 3 months in two major teaching hospitals in China. It's not as easy for naturopathic doctors to find adequate residency positions because they're, at the time that I graduated, there was only about 1,000 naturopaths, licensed naturopaths in the country. Now there's about 5,000. So I chose to go to China to see pathology, and in 3 months I had almost 600 patient contacts and saw a lot of pathology. I passed national licensing examinations, and that's 14 clinical exams and 6 basic science exams, and these are taken over a three-day period, pretty traumatic 3-day period, but it was fun studying for them. And the basic sciences are completely comparable to medical doctor basic science examinations. The clinical exams are different in that there's a greater emphasis on dietary and herbal therapeutics in our training, but I will say that I had 4 or 5 full quarters in pharmacology, and in order to maintain my license here in Alaska, I need to have 23 hours of continuing education a year, and of those, 7 need to be pharmacology continuing education credits, even though at this point I'm very limited in my ability to use pharmacologic agents, just a few that are naturally occurring bioidentical hormones, for example, but most of the legend drugs, antibiotics, and antihypertensives that I'm interested in being able to offer to my patients are not legally available to me right now, although I maintain current training in those substances. So another question was about malpractice. I've enjoyed a good relationship with our local hospital since 1996. I've been part of the hospital roster as an allied healthcare provider, and part of maintaining my liaison with the hospital requires that I have malpractice. I've got standard $3 million, $1 million malpractice insurance, and I would guess that most of my colleagues also have that. I've never needed to use it, and there's a very, very low incidence of malpractice actions against naturopaths. It's one of the reasons that my insurance stays affordable, so I'm happy about that. The other thing that my liaison with the hospital requires is, in fact, right now I'm going through every 2 years we go through re-credentialing. I've got a sponsoring MD, and I have to prove my continuing education and maintenance of my malpractice insurance, and they review all of the ways that I've used the hospital. So I have diagnostic privileges at our local hospital and limited admitting privileges. Of course, I can admit patients, but once they're in the hospital, I typically can't go and provide therapies to them once they're in the hospital, but I use the diagnostic facilities at Bartlett regularly. I don't have x-ray or ultrasound in my office, and I've also enjoyed a very good relationship with my local colleagues for many years. Both Dr. Raster and Dr. Malter are part of my referral base, and they've helped to extend good care to my patients, and I'm very grateful for that. Thank you. So it's worked well. My interaction with the MD community here has been, they've been consistently courteous and helpful, and I send them business, and that's good for everybody. They help my patients. What doesn't help my patients is when I could provide service that they need right now that I'm capable of providing, and for various reasons, they don't follow up on my recommendations, and sometimes they can come to harm because of that. And I want to tell you two stories from my recent clinical experience. A couple of weeks ago, I saw a young woman who, she was in her mid-20s, and I'd been her primary health care provider since she was a teenager. I'd actually diagnosed a severe mitral valve prolapse, and she, within a year, she needed to get surgical repair of a valve. This is a valvular heart disease. So she got the surgical repair, and that puts her at lifelong risk for, if she gets an infection, she's at bigger risk for endocarditis, which is a not something that you want to get. It's a potentially lethal illness, and so any relatively small infection for her would require antibiotic coverage. And she came to me with a large abscess in her groin. It's called a hidradenitis suppurativa. And what I needed to do was drain that abscess and give her antibiotics. And I was perfectly capable of doing that, but I wasn't legally allowed to do that. So I sent her to urgent care, and Dr. Perez gave her good care, and that was all very well. And it cost her about twice as much as it should have cost her. So this is just a relatively minor example of maybe she wouldn't have gone to urgent care. Maybe she would have just gone home and just tried to lance the boil herself. But luckily, she was smarter than that, and I urged her to go to urgent care, and she took my recommendation. But as I said, it was a lot more expensive for her than it could have been, and it would have been a little cozier for her to stay in my office and have me just take care of the problem. This just happened on Monday. I was woken up by a call at home from Dr. Eric Ludwig, who's the head of our emergency department here at Bartlett. And he had a patient of mine that I would see occasionally who had presented, and she had a massive stroke. And he asked me, okay, when was the last time you saw this patient? It was 4 years ago, and what was her blood pressure then? She had high blood pressure, and I had advised her about lowering her blood pressure, and she kept track of her blood pressure for a while, and I said, you know, this isn't the naturopathic therapies that I'd given her were not enough. I said, you need to get some anti-hypertensive drugs until you lose the weight and start exercising and reduce your stress, because right now you need a bridge until your blood pressure is down, because this puts you at risk for more serious problems. And I'm not saying that I could have saved her. I found out actually about an hour ago that she died. She was medevaced to Harborview. And if she had followed my advice, she may have been spared this aneurysm. But my point is that she chose to come to me, and I told her, I referred her to another practice, and I said, you must get these drugs, and she didn't go. And so you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. But I think my point here is that some patients prefer to use integrative healthcare practitioners, alternative medical practitioners, whatever you want to call the general category. Naturopaths, I would say, are sort of at the top of the curve of complementary and alternative medical practitioners. We have a good deal of training, and we see complicated pathology, and we interdigitate with the conventional medical practitioners in order to extend our ability to accurately diagnose. And if I had been able to prescribe the antihypertensives for my patient there in the office, she would have been more likely to take them from me. So she just didn't get around to going to see the regular medical doctor. The question Dr. Astor had about Medicare, I think that's a good one. I addressed that. Many of my patients are over 65. A good number of them are under 65. And many of my patients over 65 have secondary insurance, which they can certainly access when Medicare, Medicaid denies their insurance. And so this is a federal issue that I believe will be worked out over time. What SB 107 will do for Alaskans is to give them instant access to several dozen more fully trained wellness professionals who are capable of medication management and minor in-office procedures. I want to just mention a little bit more about my training. I talked about my how many classes in pharmacology and my continuing education requirements. I did what I'm talking about with minor surgery is removing moles, punch biopsies, removing splinters, suturing of lacerations. I did my time with pig's feet and learning how to, we all did IVs on each other in school. There's a good amount of training. And as I think maybe Dr. Miner said, not all of us are going to want this extension. Some naturopathic doctors work in, become subspecialty. They go into midwifery or they go into energy healing. And I'm, my style of naturopathic medicine is that I'm a primary care doctor. Most of my patients view me as their primary care physician doctor, and I'd like to be able to serve them in the capacity to which I was trained.
Thank you.
I think that the bill will help to fill that need. Any questions?
Hearing no question, no questions. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, I'd just like to say I'm impressed.
Thank you.
With your attitude and how you present the case. Thanks.
Senator Thomas?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just out of curiosity, your course of study was what you chose, but was what you did prescribed or required, or was some of it or part of it all, none, whatever, simply what you chose to do versus what was required for your degree?
That's a great question. I don't think you have to go to an Ivy League college to become a naturopath, but you do need a four-year undergraduate degree. And I chose to go to China because I knew I'd have a lot of patient contacts there. And you certainly do need X number of patient contacts in order to pass off on the clinical portion of the training. And it's well regulated in Alaska. You need to pass national licensing exams. You need to every 2 years re-up your continuing education certification and prove that you've kept abreast with new trends and done continuing education. And of course you have to have graduated from an accredited school. I also would like to mention that Alaska is the only state in the western bloc of California, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Arizona, Colorado recently, that doesn't allow naturopathic doctors to prescribe limited roster of legend drugs. And we're not interested in narcotics or chemotherapeutics. We certainly are going to refer. And in fact, most medical doctors refer for chemotherapeutics and narcotics. The average MD isn't going to be prescribing those drugs either, although, of course, they could.
And just one minor thing. The undergraduate or baccalaureate degree is required in a relevant field specific to?
It is not, and that's a good question. My undergraduate degree was not in a science, and it's one of the reasons that it took me quite a while. I had to go to community college for 2 years to get my basic sciences before I could even enter my graduate program.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your testimony. There's no one else. Is there anyone else to testify? Would you come forward, please? We are running over time, but we'll finish the testimony if you don't mind. Is it this is the last one?
3:30, Madam Chair. So if I
okay, we got just a few minutes.
I'll try and make this brief.
Not a problem,
Madam Chair. My name is Alex Malter. I'm an internist in Juneau, Alaska, and I actually wasn't planning on testifying, except this question of the task force came up, and turns out that I had participated in Senator Seekin's task force for the past 4 years, two or three years ago, as a representative of the medical profession. And I thought that maybe I could shed a little light on what happened there and give you a little bit more insight. That task force came out of a similar bill. And when the legislature 3 or 4 years ago tried to put all this together, wrestling with the same difficult questions that you all raised, that are really valid questions and that there's not an easy answer, they thought that it wasn't really realistic in their 120-day session to mold a solution to this. So they put together this task force. And the members of the task force, other than myself, who might have had some more reservations, the members of the task force were generally really supportive of trying to craft something that would have worked for the state. We had a half dozen meetings, 4 or 5 meetings, and I think we actually had all of the meetings, and I was quite disappointed that a report didn't come out. I certainly can't speak for the other task force members, but my observation was that despite the fact that folks were interested in crafting a solution, that when we heard the testimony, there were still enough concerns from Senator Seekins and others that they felt uncomfortable really crafting what they had anticipated at the beginning, which was a solution. And that was my impression of why we didn't get a report out of that task force, is because some of the members were not comfortable in the end being quite as positive as they'd hoped to be when they went into it. That was my observation. I just want to make one or two more points and perhaps offer one last idea. When we looked at this in the task force, I brought a little bit of the paperwork with me. We looked at some of the curriculum of what was to be covered in naturopathic school, and this might have changed in the last few years. I've not reviewed it since. But back then, we found that in the 4 years of school, the naturopathic curriculum, this was from a textbook of naturopathic physicians out of Seattle. I think it probably is associated with Bastyr University, which is one of the preeminent naturopathic universities. They list the scope of practice, the types of therapeutics a naturopathic physician may choose, include acupuncture, botanical medicine, clinical nutrition, electrohydrotherapy, homeopathy, light and air therapy, massage therapy, naturopathic manipulative techniques, psychologies, manipulation, surgery, and then lastly, number O, use of appropriate pharmacological agents. What I would argue and what my concern has been is that essentially for a medical physician, an internist, the first 2 years of schooling I do in the classroom, the last 2 years of medical school and my 3 years of residency training are essentially all dedicated to putting together diagnostic techniques and therapeutic techniques and learning to really prescribe safely and appropriately. So really 5 years of on-the-job training before I'm out practicing. And indeed, at least 4 years before you can get, that is 2 years after medical school before you can even get licensed in the state of Alaska. My concern is when I look at this list of therapies that apparently, again, I can't speak for all the naturopaths, but apparently the naturopaths are sometimes expected to master. My concern is when you're doing homeopathy and electrohydrotherapy and light and air therapy and naturopathic, that you don't have enough time during those 4 years to learn how to really safely prescribe medicines. Doing 60 hours of pharmacology, which is called for in the bill, an additional 60 hours to get certified by this council, you know, it might sound good, and it might sound like it's half equivalent to what people go through in their first year of medical school, but it's not the pharmacy classes or CME that makes you a prescriber. What allows you to really prescribe safely is the 5 years of on-the-job training under the direct observation of practicing professors to learn how to put diagnosis and therapeutics together. So I don't mean to be at all disrespectful to my colleagues, the naturopaths. And Dr. Kane is right. There is a good relationship in many ways, on many levels, between many of the Western allopathic doctors and some of the naturopaths in the state. My concern is it's just not realistic with the amount of classroom time that they're putting into it, plus 60 more hours now, to really learn to safely prescribe. The concern with this council, of course, I don't think Dr. Kane wants to prescribe chemotherapy, but in theory, if you guys approved this, you could end up with a council which thought it was appropriate to have chemotherapy on the formulary. I don't mean to throw out scare tactics, but at least as this is written, as I understand it, that's quite feasible. So you'd have the state, the Department of Licensing, which we've heard has big reservations apparently, you'd have the state essentially saying that it's appropriate for these naturopaths to prescribe whatever their council comes up with. So I understand that most naturopaths would be very, very above board like Dr. Kane and would be striving to do the best care. But unfortunately, all the naturopaths, you know, haven't had her Sterling background and her Harvard medical undergraduate education. And I just am wary that the state really wants to sign off that a council of five folks can say what a group of people who really might sometimes have minimal training could prescribe. Senator Thomas, if I might, I think you asked if all folks had her background, Dr. Kane's background. And I think what you were getting at was this issue of residency. And at least when I looked into this 4 years ago when we were going through this the first time, at least back then, residency was not, that is that extra year of training after naturopathic school, that extra year of internship or residency, at least back then, as I understood it, was not required. So coming back to your question,
not everybody necessarily would have done an additional year. And again, the naturopaths will have to correct me if I'm mistaken. What I might suggest, if you would humor me, I thought that the task force idea 4 years ago was a good idea, and I was actually disappointed that that it didn't come to more fruition. And if you all might think about it, one compromise might be to come up with another task force. In addition to my work here, I happen to still be on the state medical board, state medical association's board of trustees. That's different than the state medical board. And I can assure you that the medical association would be happy to participate this time as it did 4 years ago. I can assure you that I spoke with the board recently on this issue. And then just finally, lastly, I have to throw in one disclaimer. Some of you may know that I happen to, in addition to my private practice, work across the street for HSS. I happen to be the Medicaid medical director. And just in case there's any confusion, I want to clarify that the Department of Health and Social Services does not have a position on this bill. This bill is considered occupational licensing. And I, by no means, am speaking for the Department of Health and Social Services with this testimony. This is my personal testimony and not from across the street. So I just wanted to make that little disclaimer.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I know that we have members that have other meetings at 3:30, and we are ready at 3:20. We are going to set this bill aside, and there's work to be done on it. If there are suggestions that you want to get to my office on how we could fix this in order to bring it back at a later date, I would like to hear from you. And all this information that people say that they have and want us to have it, be sure to leave it here if you have something today. And I'm still interested in trying to at least get the medical community, the MDs, and this group talking to each other, that maybe we can work out a solution. I don't know if it's a task force that's going to be needed, but I do want to work up a plan to try to move forward with this bill if it's possible.
If you're successful at that, Madam Chair, then I'll...
Would you...
I'd like you to talk to Exxon and the governor.
I would be willing to do that.
And then Iran and the U.S.?